You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, a good morning. 10:08 is the time on Thursday, the 16th of November. Time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design with Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. It's great to be here. Thank you. And thank you to all our listeners on this Thursday of November, the week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. One week before.
1 week away. So good to be here. And thank you for your listening as well. If you do have a question of a financial nature and you'd like to call us, and we might be able to answer, and or text. Text is good both today and Saturday for the rebroadcast. But our phone number, if you would, Ron.
The phone number is 231-947-0023. And you can text that at 833-728-1140.
I put the text line right in my phone because I thought, I'm never going to remember that thing.
Just once it's there, you can just hit whatever you label it as.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. It's a good day. And joining us, Heidi Cartwright.
Yes.
Good morning.
Just want to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone since we won't be live next week. Mm-hmm. I want to say that now.
So. Right. who's talking for us next week?
We're doing a replay, right, Deanne?
Right. A replay of Bob Simpson, Social Security. It'll be good.
Because his show is one of our most popular shows because everyone has questions about Social Security. Mm-hmm. So it's always good to hear that information a second time.
So given your timing, let's say you're stuffing the turkey, you can listen to Social Security.
Exactly. They go hand in hand.
So much.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
One year I traveled to our local schools and I asked, I think they were second graders. I said, if you were in charge at your house, how would you prepare Thanksgiving dinner? And the memorable answer is the one girl says, first you get a turkey and you put carrots inside. and then you put it in the oven. And then you have a drink. I'm going over there for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, the
step
highlights.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cute.
3 steps and you're there.
So cute.
It's all good. You put carrots inside. He never had enough carrots, apparently. And so Heidi is our own RICP, Retirement Income Certified Professional, and we were talking. And at some point in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about strategies for drawing income, given the wild nature of our stock market and its recent ascent to surprising heights in a very short period of time, the month of November here. Stock market, approximately 7 to 8% in 2 weeks. And bonds, some of the most boring bond funds, up in the last 3 weeks, about 4%.
So that's a little excitement for the bond fund, right?
I guess. Well, yes, for us, too. It's like, oh, my gosh, look at that price appreciation.
Hey.
Look at that appreciation, Martha.
I just looked at gold since you were mentioning that. Look at that.
It's up 1% today.
Man.
$19. you know, just when you think, or I think, can this thing, does this thing have anywhere to go? Watch out, you know, because you cannot predict. And having some exposure, has anyone ever said that before?
No.
If you have some exposure, that's why we want to talk about drawing income, how to draw income. And for those of you with even a moderate conservative or a moderate risk tolerance, to have some exposure to the markets, because what are these companies trying to do? They're trying to earn money. They're trying to improve their earnings, as an owner might. And when you participate as an owner. When you own the stock or the mutual fund that owns the stock, it's an incredible opportunity. Now, the other side of it is the unfortunate side of risk. You know, how do we control that? How do we stay in the game when our moods lose us, as it were? Yes.
You know, when the market was down a few weeks ago, like 1,000, yes. The Dow was down 1,000 points.
Right.
And I thought, people thought, that's it. I'm going to Treasury or bonds or whatever. And if they had done that,
then they missed this.
They would have missed this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's really hard. You can't predict.
No, you cannot. And what's interesting, too, is T-bonds, two-year T-bonds, 2 days ago were down about 0.5% in the period of that day. And what that means is that the price appreciated significantly. So it was kind of an upside-down situation where the yields on the two-year Treasury bond were lower than the T-bill, the much shorter, up to a year. So a six-month Treasury bill, just to dive into that part, was at about 5.4%. Well, the yield on the two-year bond was about 4.8 or so, 4.8, 4.9. Why would I buy a two-year bond and take that kind of a hit on the interest rate? Because if rates go down, then your value goes up, but you've also locked in your rate should you decide to hold through that maturity period. And guess what? There it was. That's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we don't know the future, and we're not saying that we do. But we certainly can look at the past and learn from it, can we not?
Right.
Including me. I mean, seriously. How long have you been at this, Dennis, and you're still learning? Yes. God above.
When you look at history, you can find patterns, or you can find things where maybe a portfolio did better during a downturn. And you can look into, well, what was in there that helped that portfolio have less of a loss than another. And so part of that is what we call diversification. And that has found to help people through different economic times by diversifying and having different kinds and different types of investments.
Yes, that can appreciate at different points in different ways. And it truly is amazing to watch. Now, just thinking about that diversification as you were talking, we had John Sluice in yesterday talking about taxes. And a full class. Was it ever fun? It was a gorgeous day. And he did a great job talking about that, and we're loving having these classes. So we're going to be talking about more classes here. We're already scheduling those right now, January, February, and so on, for the classroom there at Prout. So for those who came out, even the gentleman on the motorcycle, and I got to visit with him, I couldn't believe he was riding his motorcycle. That was just weird.
Middle of November.
Yeah, November.
Amazing.
Crazy.
You bet. Joining us, too, you've heard her voice already, is the Deanne Jennings. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone. So much to be thankful for, and especially want to say we're thankful to our listeners. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Ron and Colleen. It's a pleasure doing this with you guys.
Thank you. You're right. We appreciate greatly our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Couldn't agree more.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, as we were prepping for this, I was saying the same thing, and Heidi's got a song from the 1942 movie Holiday Inn from Bing Crosby we'll be listening to at the break. So let's go into today's material. It's questions. Financial advisors asked Ed Slott at the conference there in September. And there are some great questions here to help us see what's going on in the street, if you will. And I think they're great questions because they can help us understand our own situations, possibly. And this is from page 4, Heidi. My client, yeah, here's the first one. My client has a 401k.
You can see I was looking for what page are we on.
My client has a 401k, IRA, and a high income. Quite a combination. He is over the Roth IRA contribution income threshold. That means he makes more than $228,000 a year for 2023. So relatively up there. Can he and his non-working spouse contribute $7,500 each to a traditional IRA and then convert it to a Roth? What's the answer, class? Can he contribute to an IRA?
Yes.
See, we're thinking now. I have to take off my coat. Makes me all hot and sweaty. So
I'm the only one guessing. Why?
Yeah, what's going on? You're the only one not embarrassed. Shut up, Dennis, already. Jeez. So what do you guys say? Kenny? Can he contribute?
Yes.
Yes. Ooh, well.
Yes, he can.
And?
But there's some things that go.
And some things to know. Ah. Anyone can have an IRA as long as they have earned income. Anyone. It depends on what IRA we're talking about. Could be a regular IRA, a Roth IRA, a non-deductible IRA, and that's the one this gentleman can use, as well as his spouse. They are both age 62. He's an airline pilot retiring at age 65, so he's 62. Can he and his non-working spouse both contribute? The answer is based on his income alone. Yes, they can make non-deductible traditional IRA contributions and then convert to Roth IRAs using the backdoor Roth strategy. Why would they want to do that?
Well, maybe they can't put money directly into a Roth.
Yes. Why would they want it in the Roth?
Because it can grow tax-free.
Yes, and they don't have RMDs when they're 70 and 73.
Mm-hmm. Or 75, yeah. or 72.
The ever-moving age. What age are we at? Even though the wife does not have any earned income, she can make a spousal contribution by leveraging her husband's income. So she can have a Roth IRA in this case, too. Since they are both over age 50, they can use the age 50 catch-up provision and contribute the maximum of $7,500 in 2023. What's the maximum for 2024?
$8,000.
Good job. He was here last week.
I listened.
Ron, you get an A+, man. Mm-hmm. That's great. So isn't that interesting? There are so many options in terms of saving out there. Why would I want to save in a tax-free account that grows tax-free? Well, the answer is right there in what it's doing. Invested well over time. Bam. Oh, you brought the IRA and distribution ordering rules, which I copied off but never brought. Did you pull that off the copier?
No, I just have it in my folder
prepared.
Of charts.
That's why she's the A+ student. Dennis is somewhere behind. So, next. If a 50-year-old man has a Roth IRA and has contributed $50,000 over the years, so let's just say $5,000 a year for 10 years. Keep it simple. Can he take the principal out, if needed, without a penalty, even if he's under the age of 59 and a half? Can he take the principal out if needed?
I say no. Nope, I'm wrong.
Yeah, the answer is yes. Surprise. Hmm. So the 50-year-old in your scenario has full access to the $50,000 of his Roth IRA contributions, tax and penalty free. Hmm. Based on strict Roth IRA distribution ordering rules, contributions come out first. What you put in, your principal. So the 50 grand comes out first.
At any age you could pull that
any
out?
Any age.
Oh.
Okay. The guy was only 40 years old. Hmm. So you see what it's saying. Then Roth conversions, contributions come out first, then the conversions. So you'd converted amounts from your IRA to the Roth over time versus new money that you put in. You, in essence, wrote a check as a contribution. All right. Then earnings. So let's say it was 50 grand you put in over a number of years. It's now worth $100,000. Mm-hmm. Earnings come out last in terms of ordering. Which makes it great, you know, let's say you have an unexpected emergency and you need to draw some money out of that Roth. It's available. Some people want to know that, some don't.
And you don't have to put it back in. It's not like a loan. You can pull it out.
Pull it out.
Penalty free.
But if you did want to put it back in, could you do that, Heidi?
No. You can contribute more funds. You can convert funds from your traditional IRAs, but you would be limited by the contribution limits and qualifying for those.
What about the 60-day rule?
The 60-day rule, you can do that. That's one workaround, but you have to have the money back in the account within 60 days. If it's 62 days, 120 days, you cannot put it back in. And you're only allowed one of those 60-day rollovers per year, 365-day year. Mm-hmm. So it's something you must be very deliberate and careful about if you want to use that 60-day rollover rule.
To me, it's almost like thinking about a rocket ship. I mean, obviously, you have to be careful, make sure it's going straight up. But it has a lot of power, an incredible amount of force. The force majeure, if you will. It's just insane. But if you can get on that bucking bronco, speaking of the show Heartland, oh, it's just so good. But if you're willing to get on that bucking bronco and you understand even some of these ordering rules, it's amazing how powerful they can be to help satisfy maybe current needs that you hadn't anticipated outside of your emergency fund, which you should have outside, according to Mr. Ramsey. If you have to withdraw, you may be surprised how liberal that is for you and the options you have. But in terms of taking withdrawals at retirement and all the rest, that's in essence what they're made for. But it's amazing how powerful they can be on the way up, too.
And we've actually have clients who have done this. I worked with a client recently who had taken money out for a down payment on a home, and they took out the money from their Roth. And what we did is we went back and made sure that they had made those contributions, and that amount was greater than the amount she took out. But the key is to make sure that you document this correctly when you do your taxes. You need to let your tax preparer know what you're doing so that they can check the right boxes. And we were just going over that information with her. And so it can be very effective, and it can come in as a great strategy in certain circumstances.
Fantastic strategy for help in building a house, in this case, or buying a house. Mm-hmm. And also in terms of understanding the rules in and out and what that might mean for you. I talked to a gentleman 2 days ago. He was thinking about, in essence, liquidating his simple IRA. Well, come to find out for him, you know, we talked through the tax consequences. Once he found out what the tax consequences were, which was about 30% of the amount, given his tax bracket, as well as the state, Michigan state income tax bracket, he decided at 30% that was way too much. In this case, it's okay to mention the amounts. It was about $40,000 he was going to pay in tax. That price was much too high. So, you know, like anything else, count the cost. Make certain that you know beforehand, you know, can I do this? Should I do this? As John says, in terms of tax, you can do this, but should you do this is
right.
A great way to
That's
look at
That's a whole
that.
Other question, right?
It is.
It is. And you may want to even back off as a part of it. Try to look at the whole woods, if you will, of your situation. Sometimes that's where the financial planning comes in. Where am I going to draw income? Am I going to wait on the Social Security? All these moving pieces can make a huge difference to your ultimate success. But are you utilizing them to the extent that you can as well? Because that's where the rocket fuel comes in. It really does. I've seen it personally. I'm old enough to have seen it personally. Yeah, Dennis, you're old. I get it. But that's the exciting part. To see the clients taking their QCDs out of their IRAs because, you know, they want to give. And they can't currently deduct it because we find out so few are deducting according to stats from DN, which we'll get to in a bit. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what you can do with these accounts to not only give to yourself, but to the charities of your choice possibly later as well. So it's powerful. And then can come the fun as well in utilizing these to the degree that they could be. So we have one more question before we get on to the stats. We're going to do stats in the between the this week, and then we'll get to Heidi's material as well, which is about charitable giving. Last question. If an individual has a 401k and an IRA, can they take the required minimum distribution for both of these out of one of the accounts? Ron is signaling no.
Yes.
And you are correct, sir. Yay. He wins.
Ding, ding, ding.
You get to go to the Rose Bowl parade. Required minimum distributions from plans cannot be aggregated or commingled with IRA required minimum distributions. You have to take one from each. Now, let me be clear about that. If you have four IRAs, you can aggregate them. You can take it all from one. But if you have four 401ks, who has four 401ks? Well, you may have a 457, a 403b, and a 401k. If you do, you have to take the RMD, if you're over age 73 these times, you have to take an RMD out of each. Out of each. Okay? So they cannot be commingled. So that may be one reason you decide you want to roll these to an IRA. One reason. A reason not to roll one of these accounts. We were going to talk about tax deferred plans, governmental 457 plans. If you have a 457B plan, a deferred compensation plan, that's the word I wanted, the 457B plan, you'd want to keep that money in there if you think you're going to need the funds before age 59 and a half, because any monies that you draw out once retired, you do not have to pay the 10% penalty on. So that's, again, looking at the full number of the trees in the forest, if you will, given your personal situation. What are my access rights to these funds? And how could I avoid those penalties and or even some of the tax?
Right. And I think one of the key things there in that question is if they're not working anymore, because if they are working, that's one of the things that you always, if you're still working at the company and you have a 401k and you're over your RMD age, you do not have to take an RMD from that company plan where you're working. So that could be a benefit if you're trying to keep money in those tax-deferred accounts. So it all depends. It all just depends on where you are and your specific situation. Because if you're not working anymore, you may want to, you have to take two, or maybe you want to roll it to an IRA so you can take it all from one place.
What you're saying is the big reason to perhaps not, as long as you're not more than a 5% owner of that company, to leave it in the 401k is you don't have to take the RMD out of that account. You're still hard at it, earning your income, and you don't want more income in those years, leave the money in the 401k plan in that case.
Exactly.
Then you don't have to take that required minimum distribution until the year in which, by April 1st after the year, you retire or let go.
Right.
Yes, indeed. So, Deanne, stats, if you would. Let's do that.
Absolutely. Stats. Total U.S. charitable giving declined in 2022 to $499 billion following 2 years of record generosity. Total giving declined 3.4% in current dollars and down 10.5% after adjusting for inflation. Total charitable giving has fallen only three other times in the last 40 years in current dollars in 1987, 2008, and 2009. And that source is Giving USA Foundation, Lilly Family School of Finland.
Remember the tax bill of 2017 or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And they simplified the tax form, your standard deduction of like 25 grand or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, they didn't have to itemize anymore.
Exactly.
Which caused the belief that maybe charitable giving would go down, but apparently it didn't.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It didn't fall directly as a result of that.
Yeah.
Which the prognosticators, of course, were wrong on that one. Good point, Ron.
Mm-hmm. The 710 stocks that reported earnings during the week of November 3rd averaged a one-day price gain of 2.3% on the first trading day after their earnings release. There have only been six other weeks in the past 20 years where more than 200 stocks reported earnings and the average one-day share price gain was more than 2%. The last time there was a week with a stronger upside reaction to earnings was over 14 years ago in May 2009, and that source is bespoke.
That's huge. Just to think about that, 2% in a day. So if a stock's trading at $60, it means it's up $1.20. Well, is that a lot? Well, it's 2% in one day.
One day.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about that, in May of 2009, we were pretty close to the bottom of the stock market. It was at about 7,000 or so, I'm guessing, at that point. In March of 2009, it was about 6,500. But from there, you know, briefly said, the market's at almost 35,000 today. It was about 7,000, maybe 7,500 at that point. What a time. Mm-hmm. All right, Deanne, please. Mm-hmm.
TransUnion reported that 20.5 million new credit cards were issued in the latest quarter, increasing the total number of cards in the U.S. to a record 538 million.
Wow.
The average credit card balance jumped 15% from a year ago to a 10-year high of $6,088. According to Bankrate.com, at current rates, it would take 17 years and $9,063 in interest to pay off the average balance with minimum monthly payments, and that source is CNBC.
So you said there were 538 million cards in the U.S.?
A record high, yes. Mm-hmm.
Our population is only that.
Mm-hmm. It's about, each person has about two cards.
Yeah. Well, businesses,
one
cards.
And a half to two cards,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Some people are more.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can never find the other one, so, you know, I have to keep two. Whatever.
According to Bank of America, the number of employees taking hardship withdrawals from their employers' 401k plans increased 13% in the third quarter and is up 27% since the beginning of the year. Mm. While the number of withdrawals has increased, the average size of around $5,100 is similar in size to the amount seen earlier this year. And that source is Fox Business.
May 1st of 2009, the stock market was at about 8,500. Yep, 8,500 even.
So more people taking more money out of their 401ks early or whatever they said. Why?
Yep, hardship withdrawals.
How does that impact the prognosticators and the outlook on the economy, do you think?
It just shows some...
The stress.
The stress, yeah. Mm-hmm. Due to inflation. So that's the overlying concern.
And to think that these people don't have money, and I feel like they would take money out of savings if they had it first before withdrawing from the... Like, this is the last resort, hopefully.
Right.
Generally,
so
yes.
It could indicate that people have gone through those savings and now they're having to rely on other sources.
Yeah. Online real estate brokerage firm Redfin reported that 34.1% of home sales across 40 U.S. metropolitan areas in September were all cash transactions.
Wow.
That's up 4.6 percentage points from a year ago and the highest share since February 2014. All cash transactions in September were the highest in two cities. Ron, do you want to just a shot of
it? It's soup to nuts cities, by the way.
Cedar. And
so close. It starts with a C.
It does start with a C.
Sounds like a country song. No, it's a polka song, Dennis. Yeah, yeah.
So all cash transactions in September were the highest in Cleveland, Ohio.
Wow.
And West Palm Beach, Florida at 49%, while they were the lowest in Oakland, California at 18%. And that source is Redfin. Cleveland, Ohio. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
The National Retirement Risk Index measures the share of working-age households that will be unable to maintain their pre-retirement standard of living once they retire. In each update since 2010, the NRRI has shown that around 50% of households will not be able to maintain their current lifestyle in retirement, and that source is Center for Retirement Research.
That's
a sobering stat.
That's why we plan.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. And the last one, the uber popular chat GPT AI chatbot now has over 100 million active weekly users. According to CEO Sam Altman, who noted at the company's first developer conference last Monday that more than 2 million developers and 92% of Fortune 500 companies are using ChatGPT's API. ChatGPT was released less than a year ago and is considered the fastest growing consumer internet app of all time.
Jeez.
And that source is Verge.
NVIDIA's role in this, and there's the stock chart there, Ron, just in case NVIDIA. You were wondering.
I was going to ask you, what was that company that jumped? NVIDIA.
Yeah. NVIDIA.
NVDA, wow.
NVDA.
It's kind of like straight up.
Mm-hmm. That's a mountain chart to beat all mountain charts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. It was $14 back in 16. It's about $487 today.
Mm.
That's a pretty good appreciation.
It is.
I'd call that a growth stock. Heidi, year-end charitable giving strategies. Tell us about that, please.
Yes. So Ed Slott was recently interviewed by Christine Benz from Morningstar. And this is an article that we found about the interview and what was said. And another reason I thought this could be timely is at the end of the year, you know, a lot of people think about charitable giving, and a lot of charities have a lot of campaigns going on. So this could be relevant for the remainder of the year, or if you're planning for next year, you might want to think about some new strategies. So the first question was regarding qualified charitable distributions, or we like to call those QCDs. And Eb Slott said that this is one of the best provisions in the tax code. The unfortunate part is that it doesn't apply to enough people. And what he means by that is that it only applies to IRA owners and IRA beneficiaries who are 70 and a half years old or older. Yeah. So some of us do not qualify to make a QCD.
Now, to be clear then, the IRA QCD is good for your own IRA, or if you have a beneficiary IRA inherited from a non-spouse.
But you have to be over 70 and a half, even
correct.
If you're the beneficiary. So.
Right. Even if you're the beneficiary, you have to be 70 and a half to do a qualified charitable distribution, rather, from that account. Yes.
Right. And then Ed mentioned something that Ron had just brought up, that since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expanded that standard deduction that we were that Ron was talking about, 90% of the taxpayers now take that standard deduction. So a lot of people are just taking that standard deduction. And if you're doing that and you're giving to charity, that's really nice, but you haven't been getting a tax benefit because of that if you're taking that standard deduction. But this way, doing a QCD is a way to give, like what you were doing before that happened, where you can get a tax benefit. And the tax benefit is that qualified charitable distribution amount is not included in income. So that hits before you calculate your adjusted gross income.
It comes off of your income.
Exactly. But, you know, Ed is an accountant, so he likes to...
Right.
Throw in all those extra observations. So this QCD, so what is it and how does it work? This is when you make your gift to charity directly from your IRA as a direct transfer from your IRA to a designated charity. Now, if it is a check and made out to the name of the charity, that qualifies as a direct contribution from the IRA. Normally, when you take money out of your IRA, that's taxable, but this is not. So essentially, there's a 0% tax on this distribution. You're getting and reducing your adjusted gross income from what it would have been if that IRA distribution was included in income. That would be if you put it in your own checking account and you're still fulfilling charitable goals by giving to the charity. And that's why the IRAs are the best assets to give to charity. And this is something that Ed mentions to us every single class that we go to.
Now, so, what's the tricky thing you need to know in terms of filing your taxes? What kind of reporting is one going to get about this?
Well, that is a very good point, Dennis, because there is nothing on that form, that 1099 form, where it says you took out so much from your IRA. There's no kind of code or notation that says, hey, this was a QCD. You want to make sure you note that on your tax return. And so that is something to keep in mind. You must tell your tax preparer, you must be aware that this was a QCD so that you can get credit and check the right boxes and put the right numbers in the right boxes. And what we do at our firm for our clients is we send out a letter every December, January, and we say, hey, don't forget you made all of these QCDs for the year, and that letter can be taken and given to the tax preparer so that you can get credit for those charitable contributions.
Yeah, otherwise you're going to wind up paying tax on money you shouldn't, and who wants to do that? Yeah. Now, it's a red flag letter to help you notate and give to the accountant to make certain that you keep it, if you will, it's red flagged, so that you do get that credit for having given to charity.
Okay. So if some people are in a nice position and they don't really want to or need to withdraw money from their IRA, but they have to, that's a minimum required distribution. So they take it and go, well, let's give some to charity. You don't want to do that. You want to have it direct from the IRA to the charity.
Correct.
But what if you say, well, we need that money, so we'll take our minimum, but we do want to donate $1,000 to our charity this year. Can you do like just small amounts or any amount?
Sure. After you, like, say in that case, that example you just gave me, say you took your RMD because you needed it, you took the whole thing. There's that the required minimum distribution is just what you have to take out.
You have to take it.
You can always take more out, and you can do a QCD after you've taken your RMD. It's just if you want to offset your required minimum distribution with a charitable distribution, that you would want to do that QCD first.
Right. But any amount?
Right. Up to $100,000 this year. Okay. And I think that's part of the new changes, is that's going to be indexed in the future.
Yeah, it's indexed to, in 2024, to $105,000. Yeah. So for those who are giving the maximum QCD to charity, which is $100,000 this year, next year they'll be able to give $105,000, which for most people is going to totally encompass all of their RMDs, but it can be more. So there's a huge project you want to help accomplish. Your RMD is $10,000 and you want to give $20,000 or $50,000 or whatever it is. Your IRA may be the best place to do that, because that money then will never be taxed. That is cool.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
And in fact, I thought it was interesting what Ed said in this interview. He goes, people like tax benefits, but that's not why you should be doing it. That's just the cream. The reason you give to charity is because you want to give to charity. The tax benefits only work if you're charitably inclined. In other words, you were going to give anyway. But if you give it a different way, you get tax benefits in the end. So you're still giving the asset away either way, but you can get a tax benefit by doing a QCD. And so when it comes to charity, it only works if you're truly charitably inclined and you want to give. And that's what Ed had to say about that.
I like that. It's a great way to expand your horizon if you do want to give charitably to those who can use it to further your funds and leverage your funds in ways that you possibly couldn't do on your own.
Certainly. And so the interviewer went on and she said, so there's a disconnect between the two ages when we're talking about RMDs and QCDs. It's 70 and a half for QCDs. And right now the required minimum distribution age is 73. So you just want to keep in mind that even if you're not ready for RMDs, you can still do a QCD as long as you're 70 and a half. You don't have to wait until your RMD age.
So let's say your income is inordinately high and you still can't take the item. You still can't itemize deduction. Now, Ron, you almost got to that. I wondered if you were going to ask. You know, if you're itemizing deductions, you may be better off writing the check. in certain scenarios to that charity because you're able to take that versus the standard deduction. Now, the standard deduction for those over age, 55, 65, whatever age that is, who are retired, let's just say, is going to be over $30,000 in 2024. We're going to be discussing those new amounts because the tax brackets have been indexed for inflation for 24 as well. So those brackets have all gotten wider. Mm-hmm. The amount of income that you can earn in 2024 is going to increase pretty significantly, and you'll still be in the 12% tax bracket. I gave current, I get those numbers in my head, and I think 89,000 is approximately the top of the current 12% income tax bracket, taxable income. Well, in 24, it's going to go to about $95,000 or so, if memory serves correctly. So that's, 23 tax planning, married, that's for married filing jointly. It's $89,450. And so there are some expansions going on for the amount that's going to pass at a lower tax rate in 2024. How are we doing on time?
Well, we might as well just take it up here with 3 minutes left. Time is flying by here.
I have one more thing.
We did our stats here. I forgot. So, yeah go ahead, Heidi.
All right. So I thought this was a good question from the interview. She said, what kind of documentation do people need if they're going to do the QCD? And Ed replied that you need the same documentation you would need for an itemized deduction. You need what's called a CWA letter, a contemporaneous.
Okay.
I should have practiced that one.
That's okay.
Written acknowledgement. That's a letter that you get from a charity. Almost every charity sends this out when you give funds, whether you can deduct it or not. They say, we got this and no goods or services were received in kind. So the key here is for the QCD, you can't get anything back. He gives an example. Let's say you gave $10,000 to some organization and they gave you show tickets, or maybe they gave you CDs or a DVD or something worth $200. All right, so you'd have a $9,800 net deduction. If you did that with a QCD, you would lose the whole $10,000 deduction. Hmm. So if you get something back. Yeah.
No gifts allowed.
Take nothing back. Thank you so much.
All those John Denver DVDs that they give away.
Oh, yeah. Hey, speaking of taxes, December 14th, we're going to have John Sluice in the studio. He's a tax expert, so get those questions ready.
Do you have a lunch and learn for December?
We do not.
You do not.
We have a break in December.
Well, yes, understood.
We'll start back up in January.
Yep.
Okay. So, 947-3992.
You bet.
Prout Financial Design.
Talk to Melissa. She's got the schedule. She'll help you. If you want, the first meeting is
It's complimentary.
Is complimentary. Is non-deductible. All these terms go through
tax-free.
My mind.
Tax-free.
And
compliance-approved terms.
Yes, exactly. I got to remember all those. So there is no obligation with that first meeting. And no fee. So we offer that as a way for you to get to know us and vice versa. And if you do wish to proceed beyond that, we'll talk about those details. So appreciate it always. Thank you, Ron.
ProutFinancialDesign.com, Traverse City, Michigan. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings. Thank you all.